pretty cute. It's pretty cute.
Okay, hey everybody, welcome back to Validate Me,
where me and my dad show each other stuff that we like in hopes that the other will think it's cool and validate us. And I think that's the intro. I think I did it.
That's pretty good. That's as close as an intro as we've gotten. This is episode 4.
Is it?
Right? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and this is the closest we've been. So this is Presley's assignment to me.
Two assignments.
Number 2.
Yoy.
And Presley, what did you give me this time?
Okay, so I gave you the extremely underrated and very amazing album, El Radio.
Yep.
And the very, very terrifying and very, very adorable game, Doki Doki Literature Club.
Doki Doki Literature Club. I think we're going to start with Doki Doki Literature Club, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Because I think I may actually have more to say about Doki Doki. And I don't want to run out of time.
Proud.
But we'll see. I don't know. We've got a song-by-song breakdown about audio, too.
Radio.
So we can we'll play with that as we get along.
Oh, jeez. All right. That was close.
So first thing, let's do a little housekeeping.
Woo.
So I'm going to say first this time. If you are liking what we're doing and you're having a good time, I think it would really help us out if you would go hit up iTunes and leave a review or a rating over there. Like, I don't know if it would, but I hear people say that are doing podcasts that it helps them if you do that, and I assume it sort of bumps you up a little bit in the iTunes ratings, and iTunes is probably a main way that people discover content this kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just a little, you know, a star rating or a review would be really awesome. If you're listening to what we're doing and you're not enjoying it, probably don't do that.
Yeah.
But if you're having a good time like we are putting this together, then it'd be great if you could go over to iTunes and leave us a little review. Yeah? And if you want to reach out and get involved in the conversation, Presley, how do you do that?
So if you want to reach out and get involved in our conversations, leave a comment. You can leave a comment on the YouTube video if you're watching it there, or send us a tweet at validatemecast on Twitter, or send us an email at validatemepodcast@gmail.com.
There you go. That should be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you guys, and we'll incorporate your stuff into the conversations.
Yet. Become the first emailer.
Yeah, you can be the first emailer and get a first email shout out next week when we do the podcast if you send us an email.
Like, no one uses email anymore, though, so that might be hard.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You're like the only person that uses email.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Well, not like pretty much.
I don't think even pretty much. I think like Gmail is not in business because I do email.
You do email a lot.
I do a lot of email, but yeah, I don't think I'm the one keeping Gmail's doors open or Microsoft Exchange or any of those massive products. Cool. All right. So
Hotmail.
Let's talk a little bit about Doki Doki Literature Club. Here, I've even got a little smaller. Because it's super cute.
Doki Doki.
Okay, why don't you lay out the premise here Doki Literature Club for us.
All right. Number one, first thing I have to say, please heed the warning. There is a warning in the game that it's do not play this game if you are squeamish, young, or have depression or anxiety. Me, a 12-year-old, played it anyways. Mm-hmm. But if you, like, is it okay if I say the triggers that are in the game?
Now, look, we have established that the podcast is spoiler territory.
Very much.
So we're not going to do a non-spoilery conversation about Doki Doki Literature Club. It only takes a couple of hours to play through it. So yes, if you need to, go play it and come back and watch the video.
So the triggers in this game are cutting, suicide, depression, abusive parents, all that jazz. So if any of that will trigger you, be very careful while playing the game. It is a fantastic game. It is very clever, and I love it a lot, hence why I made my dad play it.
Okay, let's give us the overview of what the overarching kind of theme is of what's going on here.
Okay, so
super high level.
Super high level. The theme is, this is a very stereotypical visual novel type game, and visual novel not as in Homestuck or Undertale, visual novel as in Dating Simulator.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're called now.
Yeah, and so I guess that's a thing?
What?
A dating sim?
Yeah.
Because I've never actually played a dating sim.
I have played dating sims before.
So I don't get the... I mean, I get it. Just by playing it, I can see what a dating sim must actually be like.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I didn't get the sort of inside jokiness of comparing this to an actual dating sim. I assume it starts off a lot like a dating sim.
It does.
Like, things start to go sideways a little bit, I assume it's pretty much like a dating sim.
Right.
Yeah?
To be fair, the only dating sims I've played, like, a My Little Pony dating sim when I was, like, 8.
Yeah.
So, I know that, and I've watched people play Hatoful Boyfriend and Dream Daddy and Honey Pop. So don't play Honey Hop Pop, by the way. That is a
So why don't you explain what a dating sim is while we're at it, so that people who don't know dating sims can understand how a dating sim works.
Okay, first of all, if you don't know what a dating sim is, who are you? but second of all, a dating sim is a visual novel. I'm assuming people can understand what that is. It's like a video game where the text appears on screen and you can click through dialogue options and make choices.
Yeah, and usually there's like still pictures that change every once in a while.
You kept complaining about that.
More often than having like a, you know, the one picture at the beginning of a chapter in a book. So it's more often than that. But they're static images usually, with maybe tiny pieces of animation, like little animated elements to them. But usually it's like a still picture. And then, like Presley said, there's dialogue that's in front. Then you kind of click to move. You don't even have to do that, though. You can set it up to kind of click through as until you just sit and read it mostly.
And you can make choices. So it's like a choose your own adventure.
A little choose your own adventure aspect to it, certainly. I was wondering, certainly, as I got into this one, if I was going to be allowed to make a decision. That was one of my initial hangups. Like, it took a long time to set the stage. And it is, like, after playing it, like, I see, like, it's sort of lulling you into complacency, into sort of this false sense of security before it launches its total craziness at you. And I
will talk to you about the one, like, gripe you had at the beginning about choices, because there is a reason
The specific gripe. Okay, here, I'll lay out what it was, right? We're in spoiler territory here. Right. Okay, so, like, the game's building up, and you're reading, and so apparently, like, this dating sim, there are... In this case, like, there's like three or four girls, right, that are in the game. And, well, but it becomes three.
Three
paths or whatever.
There are three paths.
There are these four girls in this club that you joined in high school, and you can choose different actions that you take. Like, in this case, you're writing poetry because you're in the literature club, and you pick, like, what kind of words you want to put in your poem, and you know that one of those girls will specifically like the words that you're choosing, and so you're trying to get that girl to fall for you and become your girlfriend, right? So that's a sort of dating sim. And boyfriend, whatever. They go both ways, I assume. There are dating sims for girls and for boys. And are there LGBT-friendly dating sims?
Dream Daddy.
Okay, well,
there are so many.
No. I'm not surprised at all by the fact that those exist. I have played very many of them. But yeah, so you're making choices trying to impress one person. Mm-hmm. And are they supposed to in some way improve your ability to do that in the real world? Or is it just like a pure fantasy kind of thing? Yeah, I was wondering if it's like a practice
So
the beginning of the game, you meet these girls and they kind of give you hints. They drop hints about what they like so that you know later when you're doing something for them, you should be picking certain stuff if you like one of the girls in particular, if you like their personality. So they let you know a little bit about their personality so you can decide who you like. And they also let you know some of the things they like. So when you buy a present or you write a poem or you do something in one of these games, you can gear it towards one of the girls.
Yeah.
Right? Or boys, whatever.
So
in this, like, I felt that coming because I played a ton of, like, text adventures. Like, it was kind of Zorky or, like, there's a really great Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text adventure that we need to play.
Spoilers, I'm not done with the series yet.
No. There's some really amazing stuff to play, right? And so I was kind of used to the format, and I loved Choose Your Own Adventures when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so it starts in the beginning. Right. You meet all the girls, and then they all sit down in the club, and then, like, three or four times it references... Hey, there's two empty seats. One is next to Monica, and one is next to Sayori. And so it's letting you know that you're going to have to pick between those two seats. And it was certainly making me feel like I was going to get to pick which of those two seats I sat in. And then suddenly it just says, you take a seat next to Monica.
You took a seat next to Sayori, actually.
Okay. You take a seat next to Sayori. And I was like, wait, what? Like, that was the first time I thought I was, after like an hour of playing, I thought I was going to get to make a decision and it was going to be who I sat next to, making the first step towards my path journey.
Down towards Sayori or Monica.
Down towards whoever I was going to pick to sit next to. But turned out, not so much. It made that decision for me. Yes. Luckily, it was soon after that. Although, like, the first night, I kind of stopped playing there.
I know, and I was so mad. I was like, I promise you, this is not what this game's about.
So right after I came back and started playing again, it actually let me make some decisions.
Yeah.
And a lot of the decisions are the poetry.
Yeah.
In this game, particularly. It's, you know, it's you're writing poems. And so the mechanic is you pick 20 words. Mm-hmm. And there are little, chibi icons of stickers. The girls next to you, stickers. And when you click a word, one of the little girls kind of gets excited and jumps and is excited that you picked her word. So you can kind of see if you're picking right and marching down the path. Okay, so you're going to explain to me why I didn't get to pick who I sat next to?
Yep, that's Monica's fault. So that was Monica, because she has been altering the code since the Literature Club was created. The gimmick in this game is that when you are president of the Literature Club, you gain self-awareness that you are in a video game.
Okay.
And that was her first figuring out she can influence your decisions. And
by making me sit there.
By making you not be able to choose.
But then why didn't she make me sit next to her?
That is her... Well, I don't know if at that point she knew that she was a side character. So she just wanted... She was just being like, okay, well, I'll have him sit next to Sayori.
Yeah, when he meets these other girls and then falls for me later, it'll be all the more impactful.
Yes, and it will be... it's like her... the game, from a writing standpoint, it is the game foreshadowing that later your agency over your decisions is going to be taken over.
Oh, interesting.
So that is foreshadowing.
Oh, okay. I'll buy that. Well done. It's definitely a very subtle game in a lot of ways, a very not subtle game in a lot of other ways. But it is very much like Presley's talking about the at least one character in the game at any given point is sentient.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know that they're... Like, I actually have the side theory. I'm still sort of leaning on my side theory a little bit, but that's the one I told you.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. So the idea is that one of the characters in the video game, one of the girls that you're trying to woo... is...
Jeez, I haven't heard that word in forever.
Is she's sentient, and she knows she's in a video game, and she wants you to pick her.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you do something that is not leading towards picking her, she has the ability to change the game, which is super, super, super clever. And she goes back... This is actually a little bit of a throwback mechanic. Like, you may not know that, right? But there are examples of things that edit the file system, even games that edit their own file system and their files, and you have to dig into the files a little bit to fix them and play them. And so she's actually changing the code, and you get actual code errors that display on the screen, and you don't have to, but a lot of times you can go look at the file system under the cover and see that she made changes and different things happened, and she actually go so far as to delete other girls.
Mm-hmm.
So you find like the character screens for the girls, and you can go in and she will in various ways she will get rid of the other girls, and they will disappear from the game in horrible fashion, but then they'll just be totally gone, right?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, the deleting is actually after they die, by the way.
Well, so she's deleting them from the story by having them commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they've committed suicide, everything kind of goes sideways and it's all depressing and it doesn't feel like a fun game anymore. So she resets the game without that girl being in it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that the girl that committed suicide is just gone. And so it turns into like It's a Wonderful Life in the beginning.
I don't
which,
know that
which is
still.
Going to be one of your assignments coming up here for Christmas probably, or we're at least going to watch it for Christmas. But it's this idea of I want to commit suicide because the world would be better off without me. And so this guy gets to see what the world would be like had he never been born.
Cool.
The world is not as good a place because of all the things that he did in his life that he didn't realize he was doing, all the people he touched, right? And so I thought it was really going that, especially at the beginning, because Sayori is the first girl that you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And like they say a couple of times in the first loop through the story that she's the one that kind of holds everybody together and keeps everybody happy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I thought, oh, you get rid of her, now you're going to see the club without her influence, and it's going to be a more cutthroat kind of thing. And it was. No, it totally, totally was. But the story wasn't really about that. And like maybe you start leaning towards one of the other girls, and so Monica has to come in again and tweak the story to make things go a little sideways. And so, I thought that was actually really fascinating. Like, it's a beautifully executed game.
Right.
And while it does take a while for it to get to where it needs to be telling its real story and kind of doing the thing that is interesting about it, it does that for a reason. Like I said, it's really kind of lulling you in and pulling you into this like monotony of the repetitious version of the storytelling. And then suddenly things go sideways.
Yeah.
And they do it with really cool glitchy graphic mechanics that
yes,
I kind of like
music.
And creepy music. The music is all like normally here, I'll play the Doki Doki theme again because it's all like peppy and Doki Doki. Kawaii. And so it even changes relatively subtly while you're playing sometimes. Like, you can tell the music changes, and like it switches to a minor key, and it changes a couple of different levels, and then the music will stop and it'll go silent. And like I was telling Presley, like, when the music stops, you
never
know,
a good thing.
Yeah, you probably don't want to click next until you're prepared, because you don't know what's about to happen. And you get static, and you get the characters kind of overlay over the dialogue. Like, really beautifully done.
Do you have, can you, if you play something on that computer, will it play regardless, even if it's not a sample?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, because I do want you to play the theme for Sayori Suicide. I think you're going to love the name of it. It's called Sayonara.
That's cute. You have to tell me that kind of stuff before we start the podcast, though, so that I can cue it up and prep it, because I don't have it ready to go. Yeah.
I didn't think of it until now.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, you don't always have everything on your board. Whoops. That's it. We'll put it on the board, and we'll have it queued up so that we can play stuff to go back to people. Because I think every once in a while, people who watch a long time should be able to go back and see, like, references to older stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because we'll play the... It's from Japan! Even though we haven't covered that.
we haven't covered Be More Chill yet.
Yeah, no, we've played it a lot.
I insisted that was on the soundboard.
This had to be. This is my soundboard thing that I haven't gotten to use yet, but I'll go ahead and play it.
Please don't correct me. It sickens me.
I love that line. So yeah, if you tell me, you post in the comments below if you know where that's from, because I love it. It's one of my favorite things. All right, cool. So yeah, I thought, like, that's super, super cool. I also thought that in looking at my notes here, I've got, there's some elements of Adventure Zone.
Yeah!
Like, it's, things tie together, right? Things always kind of come in, and you see connections between the media that you're consuming, and this one was definitely...
Everything is connected.
Yeah, right. So once she deletes one of the characters... If they mention her name again, or mention an event that happened maybe in the cycle that you restarted and didn't happen in this one, it just posts garbage on the screen. And it's very much like it's from Adventure Zone.
I'm pretty sure it's like the specific thing, which is like something that you might not know, is Mojibaka, which is a very common issue when translating, when trying to process Japanese text on a computer that's meant for running English text?
No, that's not at all what I was thinking. So what I was thinking was the pointer to Sayori's name
was
still
deleted,
exists.
But there's nothing.
No, that exists, but there's something else stored in that memory location now.
Yeah.
So when it tries to go grab her name out of memory and display it on the screen, it's displaying like binary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what that's probably what it is. That's the issue with Mojibaka, though. What it is. There are pointers to where the Japanese character should be.
Yeah, but
there's
kind of a different thing, right? Where if you get the encoding for Japanese characters. And yeah, you're displaying the encoding, basically, because you don't have the mapping to the Japanese characters on your PC. Yeah, I was assuming that was not the case here, because we did see some Japanese characters.
Yeah.
I was just assuming it was like binary. Like,
basically,
that what's happening, and you know from CS50 now, is that if you have a pointer to a memory location that stores Sayori's name, and you delete her name, then the computer will use that memory to write something else there. And if you're still pointing at that location and you say, go get what's at this location and write it to the screen right here, it's going to just display garbage.
Point is, Monica is a bad programmer.
Monica doesn't have careful memory management techniques.
Monica.
She might see this is why you started with C++ instead of starting with Python, because now you know under the covers what's going on with your memory management.
This was written in Python, right?
So you shouldn't have that bad of memory management stuff if you're doing it in Python.
Monica.
That's another thing. Come on, Monica. How can you not code in Python? Good grief. All right, so the Adventure Zone, like, memory wiping mechanic, and like, you can't say something because you get the... when you try and say it. It was totally like that. I thought it was funny. I think it is super, super funny and cute when they start cussing. I don't know.
This is something I brought up to Mom before in different ways.
Right.
Like, just, I love the way this person curses.
Well, like, Mommy knows that one of my favorite things in the world is toddler profanity.
It's amazing. She's just, like, silently facepalming.
I don't know why, but I think it's super funny. Like,
it's adorable.
When Cooper is running around cussing, or when Presley was cussing when she was a little kid, or when I see a little kid cussing, I think it's funny. And so this, like, they're in like high school, right? But they're super cute, kawaii, like
moe.
Chibi kind of things, moe. When they start cussing, it's really funny because they've built it up so far that you've understand their personalities and their speech patterns, and you feel like you know a lot about them, which is the whole point of a dating sim, right? Is that you know these girls and you can kind of pick and choose what to do. But then they start cussing and doing stuff, and I think it's super, super funny.
Yes.
And it's a Natsuki that really kind of starts.
Yeah,
she's the most foul mouthed of the
Natsuki
group.
Natsuki reminds me a lot of myself,
and she's also like the chibiest, right?
Yeah,
she's the kawaii girl for sure.
She's little and she's really. and she's kind of mean, and she has pink hair, and she tries to act cute, but is
when
really
he sees her out of school,
mean.
And she's got like the cat dress on, yeah. and there's all this stuff going. Yeah, it's super,
she reminds me of me. I like
yeah,
her.
she was the most. Yeah, she was probably the most like you out of the group.
angry small.
Yeah, so Yuri's like the emo girl.
She's goth, not emo.
Yeah, I don't know. I might go emo for her, but what's the difference between goth and emo?
Emo.
Let's go ahead and have that conversation.
All right, emo is like emo is more
nihilistic.
Yeah, why is it pronounced that? Oh my god, cutting. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm
just
very passionate.
Don't scream. Yeah.
Why is it pronounced that way? That's stupid. Anyway, nihilism. It's like she's just emo is. And leaning more towards like scene, and you have big there's like hair, and there's nihilism, and it's Panic at the Disco and like runny eyeliner, while goth is just like a darker, more like Victorian form of dress and stuff.
Yeah,
like
right
that.
But like emo being like the emotional part of the darkness, where goth is slightly more the aesthetic form
yes.
of the darkness.
Darkness. They're different darknesses.
It didn't strike you that she was emotionally dark?
But she's both. But she dresses, but she, like her
she
hair.
She's super. I mean, they're in school uniforms.
Well, yeah, but like clearly from her hair and from the way she speaks is more gothic because she does speak with all the big fancy words.
I think of more emo being someone who does self-harm than
yes.
a goth person.
But she, yeah.
And she's the self-harm person in
But she
game.
Doesn't do it because she has depression. She does it because it's her kink. Yeah.
Is that established?
That was established.
I don't know that that's true.
I'm pretty sure that was... Well, she says it...
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah, if she says... she does...
It's more a calming thing than a depression thing.
Yeah, she does say, like
when she gets manic, mm-hmm. she does it to calm herself down.
Mm-hmm. And in her, like, the note that is, like, covered in blood and stuff that she gives you before her confession, that does say... have some very sexual stuff at the end of it because it's mostly random words and then it has some.
Yeah, sure. I thought it was more. Was it Monica or one of the other girls that was saying stuff about it being her kink as
yes,
a way to put
Monica.
Her down more than it was actually.
Of course, it was Monica.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, that was a. I like that part. I'm going emo.
Woo, emo.
So she's the emo girl, and then Monica is the like all American. Japanese girl. She's the like a student that's the most beautiful girl in the school, and she's probably an athlete. I think it said something about her doing some sort of sporting of some
some
sort.
Sports?
Yeah, oh. She does sports. So that was funny. Yeah, that's so games that keep track of things on the file system I think are super cool, having to kind of look into the files. And then we'll talk in here in a second about the YouTube video that you had me watch.
Yeah.
That was kind of a bunch of the different endings and like what this one person had found. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably more. But the different scenarios of you going in and deleting characters or you adding back characters after she deletes them or doing all kinds of things with it or looking at some of the files with a hex editor and or converting them to JPEGs and looking and they turn into images. Like it's really, really super creative.
Of this conversation, I do have some very specific stuff to bring up about hidden in the stuff that's in
Yeah, no, I'm going to turn it over to you in 1 second. I got one more point and then it's all you. So... This is one of the things I was thinking that was kind of old school. There's this game, like Metal Gear Solid, right? You're familiar with its existence, at least, I assume. And this
I've watched you play Metal Gear.
Yeah. So this is one of the first things Mommy and I did when, like, in college. They had, like, the things would pop up and the two people would have a conversation. Like, Snake would have his radio comm communication with a girl back at base. Mm-hmm. And so while I was playing the game, Mommy and I would, like, act those out, like, voice act. We would turn the volume down on the PlayStation and I would play Snake's part and she would play I can't remember her name, that was back on the radio set at the headquarters.
Random
and so
girl, too.
We would laugh and like, read those things out and do that. That's when I knew that Mommy was the one for me. But we used to do that when I played Metal Gear. But one of the other things that happened in one of the old Metal Gear games, and this was Psycho Mantis. So when you first encounter like Psycho Mantis, there was a game mechanic where Psycho Mantis could read your mind. And so whenever you tried to attack him, you or her, I can't remember now, it would they would be able to perfectly block your attack because they would know what your attack was. And so they would sort of call you out as you played a little bit and be like, I know what you're going to do and I can control, watch what I can do. And then it would vibrate the controller because like having the vibration in the controller was a relatively new mechanic. And so you could see that they could had control over that controller. And so the primary way that you would beat them is you would switch to the player two controller and they couldn't read your mind if you were on the player two controller.
That's so cool.
And so you could beat them up. Right. So that was like a super cool little mechanics of like breaking the fourth wall in a video game and one of my favorite video games. And so it really kind of was a throwback to that kind of stuff too. So there was a lot of nostalgia in the game for me as like a throwback to like, I love that it's about the story and the sort of the mechanics of the game. And it's not about, you know, I'm playing Assassin's Creed Origin right now, right? Mm-hmm. And while that's a really fun game to play, right? It's more about the flash and the like the graphics and what you can do visually and like how you can build up these huge worlds and things. And like, I love this small, intimate game that's well designed and you don't care that it's not high end graphics and I'm not playing it in the PlayStation VR and I'm not, it's just really compelling like storytelling. That would be even worse.
I really hope not.
No, that wouldn't be good. Okay. Cool.
Especially if everything was still, it was like still like in the super Moet adorable.
Yeah. Of course it would have to be, right? And then maybe you turn around and there's something happening behind you or something. You could totally pull that deal. Okay. All right. Go ahead. What's up?
Anyway. Okay. So some of my points, I have the TV Tropes page and my own personal notes, so I'm going to be switching between those my phone. So let's start with my personal notes, and then we'll start talking about the TV Tropes page, just like the Mooch. We're being just like, and I have way too many notes. Okay, so some of this is just me. I watched you play a lot of this because I did want to see some of your reactions.
Yep.
And a lot of the stuff that, one thing that you said that I just thought was really funny was when we were first playing the game, you were being extremely snarky about the entire premise of the entire game because you didn't know. You thought I was just making you play a normal dating sim. So you were being so, like, you were replying to everything that happened.
It took it a while to get to not being a dating sim. I'll say that again.
Fair point. And one of the things that you kept saying was that you wanted to romance the cupcakes. Which I thought was very funny. You were like, I was like, okay, so which route are you going to pick? Because I wanted to know so that I could prepare, because you actually did end up going, because in the second act, Natsuki's route, like, while I love Natsuki, and I'm actually doing Natsuki's route first in my Golden End playthrough, Natsuki's act two end is boring, about as boring as you can get in this game.
So me switching from Natsuki to Yuri was a good thing.
Yes, because the Natsuki's end is just, you're forced to talk to Yuri at one point in the Act 2 anyways. Mm-hmm. And if you do that during Natsuki's route, she'll get jealous and beg her to beg you to only play with her instead. And then her neck breaks and she flies at the screen, and then that's her ending.
Oh, I saw that in the video I watched. It was a cool visual.
It was a really cool visual, but it wasn't like super thing. So sure. I was kept
she didn't
asking
rot
you
in the classroom over the weekend.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's so sad. But actually, let's talk about the rotting for a second.
Okay.
Because it makes me so happy, which is a really weird thing to talk about. But the color from her eyes fades. She starts losing fat and her cheekbones start hollowing out. Mm-hmm. And her blood starts turning brown.
Yes. This is Yuri we're talking about after her suicide.
There's
like a really fast
times.
Like time lapse shot of her sitting in the classroom
over the weekend,
and there are changes happening that Presley just described. Yeah,
yes, and it makes me so happy that happens.
Yeah,
because all the time in art like this, blood stays like just crimson red.
Right,
that's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's so much so that it has its own TV Tropes page.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah. Anyway, you wanted to romance the cupcakes, which I felt was relatable. I like the cupcakes. And then there was...
I would have sat next to the cupcakes if they gave me that first choice.
Sit next to the cupcake. Natsuki would be mad at you for eating all your cupcakes. And then there was... In Monica's first poem in the first act, which is Hole in the Wall.
Yeah.
One of the things she says is a hole of infinite choices.
Mm-hmm.
And in her song that plays over the credits, which I'm actually going to cover next, hint, hint, wink, wink,
nice.
Is in this world of infinite choices. So there are a lot of... And then she says, like, Monica's first writing tip in both Act 1 and 2 is, don't be afraid to stop. Don't be afraid to keep moving your hand. Don't stop. And then it'll just You'll get a puddle.
If you stop, you'll get a puddle of ink from the pen.
Yeah. And then in the song it says, the ink flows down into a dark puddle.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I was like, hey.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there were nice connections. Foreshadowing. Like, well thought out. Yeah.
Oh, and foreshadowing. And then there is, you picked Sayori last, you imbecile. Just me being very upset that you picked Sayori last.
I don't know. Like, there was the whole, like, cute best friend neighbor kind of thing. And I didn't know. I didn't feel appropriate romancing her because we had had this. It was like your Highlander thing, right? Like, I felt like I had known her for a long time. And it would have been kind of weird, like you felt about what you thought was going on with the Highlander.
But she was a child!
You're right.
And he was an adult. That's so different.
Right.
Yeah, that is actually a very... I can't believe you didn't pick up on that, because that's a very, 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 very common anime trope, that you have the tsundere best friend.
Oh, no, no.
From forever.
That doesn't mean that's the like choice I wanted to make. Right. Like, I got it. I just... I chose not to be comfortable with it.
And you didn't. And you kept pecking Sayori out. But you did get this super duper uncomfortable Sayori event, which her first CG. Mm-hmm. And CG is the, like, full illustration that pops up on the screen when you're having a bonding moment.
Right.
I cradled you in my arms. Maybe. It might be a meet cute.
We did totally had some meet cute.
Obscure podcast references.
Right.
It's not a meet cute. Also, please let us know in the comments below if you know what a meet cute is.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate about whether people actually know what a meet cute is.
I know what a meet cute is.
I've never heard of a meet
cute. To be fair,
Until I listened to that podcast, I did not know what a meet cute. I mean, I'm sure you can assume what a meet cute is, but...
that's exactly what
Have you heard of it before we just said it?
A meet cute. And then, you got Sayori's super uncomfortable event where you're like, because the main character that you play, he's really mean. I hate him.
Yeah.
He's terrible.
Bob.
Bob. Yeah, you named him Bob. I was like, why'd you name him Bob?
Right.
And you didn't capitalize it, which bothered me the entire time.
It kind of ended up bothering me the whole time. Like, you know how easy it is to capitalize a word.
And you just press shift.
Once again, Monica's not a very good programmer. No, I mean, if I put it in lowercase, they should have been able to display it in uppercase.
Well, that was Monica's fault. Monica Team Salvato's fault.
Well, I bet it was something that Monica broke.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
Whatever. It's just, I didn't give myself my actual name, though. I gave myself a nickname.
Yeah.
And it does later in the
Bob,
game.
Bob's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, Bob is mean. And Bob is complaining to Sayori, like, your hair's messed up, and there's a toothpaste stain on your collar, and I'm going to do your buttons up. And I'm like... How about you don't?
Yeah, that was all kind of weird, dude.
That was so awkward. And
that didn't make me more comfortable, like, going down Sayori's path.
No.
For sure. Because that was a whole uncomfortable kind of thing, too. I was glad I wasn't going down that path if that creepiness was happening.
Yeah, that made me super duper uncomfortable. And it's just because Bob is mean and I don't like Bob. Or Maddie. Or Maddie Patty, as the stream I watched. They named it Maddie Patty.
Bob's kind of mean.
Bob is terrible. And then you got... Which I thought was hilarious because this is a very jump scare-y game.
Mm-hmm.
You got jump scared by a cookie being thrown at Sayori. And
I did.
Audibly it was an audio made a thing. Noise.
No, she made a noise.
Yeah.
And it was like no one had made any noise, I think, up to that point.
Yeah.
Like it was just music the whole game. And all of a sudden you hear this, And I was like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah. It's just a cookie.
Yeah.
And then the audio starts making many noises.
And then there's audio cues. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
And I think, like, the Yuri's thing, too, right? Like, her self-harm thing.
Mm-hmm.
You see it twice, and it rewinds, which was really cool. Like, going through the rewind and playing it again. But I think, I have to go back and watch it again and play through it again. But it seems like the first time it happened, you got the text of her noises. And the second time, you actually got audio of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they didn't do audio of it the first time,
they did
the second time. I thought that was, again, sort of a clever thing that they did.
Yep. Yes, and I thought that was really cool. And then they do... I just want to talk about the audio for a little bit, because the audio is so good in this game.
Yep.
So, a few audio things. So, there's Sayonara, which is Sayori's hanging song.
Mm-hmm. And did you get that Monica said... She said... left her hanging this morning? Ba-da-bum!
But
they need a rim shot in the game, right?
It was amazing.
Yeah, so her hanging theme song.
Yeah, her hanging theme song mood. And so it's the glitching effects, because it starts out as just...
Love the glitching effects.
Yes. It starts out as Okay Everyone, which is the theme song.
Uh-huh.
It starts out as just Okay Everyone.
The one we just listened to?
Yes.
Okay.
Sayori's version, because each girl... has a different version of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So when you're like reading her poem or having a CG with her, it will play a different it will play like a different version of with different instruments of everyone.
Okay.
Yay! Donkey, donkey! And then I have to do the really obnoxious nya hand thing.
Do you want to go ahead and say what doki doki means, just in case anybody listening doesn't actually know what the words
doki
mean?
Doki doki is the sound of a heartbeat, and I keep confusing it with toki doki. It's doki doki.
Doki doki. So it's like Japanese onomatopoeia.
Of a heartbeat.
Of a heartbeat. Like if you're excited.
You say doki doki.
Doki doki. Yeah, my heart's pounding. It kind of means my heart's beating really fast. Like
my heart is pounding.
And it can be like I'm scared. Or my heart's fluttering because
it's
I'm falling
like,
in love or something. It's just your heart's beating really fast.
Right. You're
doki doki.
Scared because you're falling in love.
Yeah. So that's... Yeah. Or you can do it super cutesy.
I wish every time you had a heartbeat, it would just go, doki doki.
That's what it does in manga. That's the sound. Yeah, like if you're reading a comic book and you see like the pals and blams and kapals and stuff and the sound effects in the comic book. Doki doki is what you would see in manga if someone's heart is beating. Like if they're hidden or somebody's breaking in the house and for some reason they're really scared of something that's happening, you'll see doki doki. Or if they see the girl that they like, there'll be a little doki doki.
And that's the context in which it means this time. It doesn't mean someone.
I don't know. I think maybe a little of both. Yeah. Quite frankly, I think it may be a little. Whenever the music stopped and I had to click to the next scene, there was a little doki doki going on because of the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. And then actually in the logo, if you look at the logo, the doki doki is really close together to the point where the two O's form to make an infinity sign.
Oh, that's cute.
That's cool.
Okay, I'll look at that
again.
It's
a design thing.
Okay.
And then...
they love to do that, like, stylized writing in Japanese. Like, there's a whole article that we've got in one of the manga zines that we've got about using stylized kana and kanji. Mm-hmm. And they dig that.
That's cool.
So doing it in Romanji... but for Japanese words is kind of a meta play.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. And then, what was it? Oh, the music, yes. And in Sayonara, it starts out as okay, everyone, and then it starts glitching really heavily. I can play it on my phone.
No,
it would work. Whatever, it's cool. And it starts glitching and freaking out, and that was my first instance, the first thing I really picked up on of the music really heavily glitching.
Right.
And then in Yuri's suicide/confession scene, you can hear really heavy like breathing in the audio, which made me super uncomfortable, like it was supposed to. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, so sort of speaking of that, like the one of the things that I really loved most visually was when like Monica... like slowly transitioned through, was that Yuri?
Yeah, through Yuri.
Through Yuri. Like Yuri's talking to you, and again, it's just a still image. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of see this like faint eye in the middle of Yuri's face. And then slowly over time, Monica starts fading in, and then she kind of fades in front and just keeps coming. That was a really well done.
And that's
like as you're clicking through it, you slowly see this thing move forward. I thought that was beautifully done.
Right. And yeah. I do want to really quickly mention this is something I wanted to talk about a little bit earlier but forgot about. This plays into one of my favorite like ideas. I've seen it in I haven't seen it before this game, but having a side character, because Monica was designed to just be a side character, and you would have Natsuki, Yuri, and Sayori's routes to go down.
Right.
Having a side character become sentient and what they would do
to try and
that.
Take over the game.
Yeah, and like whether they would try and take over the game or they would just have to live knowing they were and everyone around them was programmed.
Right.
And this does tie into the discussion that we keep saying we're going to have about like being in virtual worlds, like being a human in a virtual world, like the Matrix and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But we keep saying we're going to have the discussion and then we don't.
We will,
I promise.
We will.
But yeah, and it does tie into that. And the difference between Sayori becoming sentient and Monica becoming sentient is really interesting, because Monica takes over the game and is trying to get you to pick just Monica.
Yeah.
Just Monica.
And it looked like with sort of the happy ending kind of thing, right? That it's even like under the covers, it's keeping track of like your save games, and so even if you, and it tells, it drops clues, like it does a good job of dropping clues, right? Because it sort of dropped this clue that like, hey, if you're about to make an important decision, maybe you should save just in case things go wrong. And I don't remember what context
that was. One of Monica's writing tips
was it?
Mm-hmm. Monica,
click the save button.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like
she's giving you an inside fourth wall hint.
Monica's writing tips was said like after she was when she was trying to do a writing tip sometime in Act 2, she's like, can you hear me? Please help me. I didn't just say that.
Yeah,
it's not Monica saying.
Okay, yeah, I got you. Okay, so she's coming over. So you can save before a decision and make one path and like go with one of the girls and then go back and do it with one of the other girls and then go back and do it with a third girl, and you get credit for trying all the branches and pathways through the game. And that's what makes Sayori happy, right?
Yeah, is so it gives you, sort of, you the gold.
You make everybody happy. Yeah.
Which is
that's, again, super clever that it keeps track of the fact that you saved and went back and restarted.
I don't know what that just was. No. I'm pretty sure that sound effect is used like in Webkinz or something.
Yeah, somebody at work trying to talk to me on Slack.
Gosh!
Yeah.
Work people.
Cool. Okay, so let's wrap up Doki Doki and move on to El Radio.
Doki Doki
was excellent.
Okay, last thing I want to bring up, which is super, very much important, is the .ch, the character files that you delete and manipulate during the game.
Yep.
Those can be, actually, they have codes in them. So the most important one is Sayori's, which gives you, if you translate it into an OGG file, which is their audio files, and then you look at the spectrograph?
Yeah.
Of it gives you a QR code.
Oh, cool.
And that QR code goes to, Project, goes to Project, if it will play, if my phone will stop misbehaving.
Generally good to be prepared for these kinds of things.
It made me reload the page. Yes, Project Bat.
What is it?
Libidina, which is theorized to be, Team Salvalto's next game.
Oh, okay.
And it is, there is a lot of foreshadowing about it, which is, it talks about a third eye, and it talks about, it gives you this, like, the website is, like, this subject X, and, like, their, that was born in 2004, which was 1 year before me, it was my age, and it gives you, like, a subject, like, sort of, do you know about the SCP? SCP Foundation?
No.
It's a extremely popular like creepypasta website
where
it's like this subject X and it gives you these test readings.
Yeah.
And they're all like human Russian sleep experiment type
things. Yeah, whatever. I got you.
That. And it's theorized that Yuri's book that she that she gives to you with the eye on the cover ties into that.
Oh,
and
interesting.
It's about this girl who is tracked down and captured by this organization that tries to change them into bloodlusting monsters. And one of the
she describes the book as that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the test readings is threat, control, and removal.
Okay.
So it's theorized that that book
is... Wait, so like that QR code takes you to a website that references some of that in
some way? And then in Monica, Yuri, and Natsuki, and specifically in Monica's file, it does talk a more about third eyes and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So that's what I wanted to bring up. That is awesome. Possibly...
hints to the next?
To the next game, which... And at the end of Monica's file, there is a 2018.
Nice.
Meaning that more information will probably be released in 2018. So make sure to stay tuned for that, because I know a lot of the audience for Doki Doki Literature Club, because Doki Doki Literature Club is probably meant to be hype for the next game where they're going to explore these concepts further.
Was that their first project?
Yes.
Okay.
Where it's going to explore, well, not the guy himself. He's worked on other things,
though.
But the company, yes.
Yeah.
Will eventually move on to other things and do a game where they explore it further. But, and Doki Doki Literature Club is just meant to be hype for that.
Yeah, no, I love when companies do. So, no, it was, what was the horror game that did that?
Which one? PT?
Yeah.
PT. Panda Time!
Yeah, PT was supposed to be like a teaser for Resident Evil, right?
And then it never actually happened.
I think it was cool. And then there was, like, I love when companies do sort of the whole Easter egg kind of thing, and then they lead you down a breadcrumb trail that takes you, gives
an
you a
ARG.
Bunch of information. And so,
Sombra's ARG was really cool.
What was the movie that did that? It was the Cloverfield. So Cloverfield.
Hey, that's the thing that Derek also
I know,
talks
he
about.
Loves Cloverfield, right? But so Cloverfield had this whole super complex world of websites, and you look at the source code, and you find a link, and you go somewhere else, and you get a login, and you have to hack into this website to learn more, and you learn all of these things about all of the stuff that's going on in the background of the world, and then you go see the movie, and it had nothing to do with any of it.
Oh my God, really?
It was like a total waste of effort. Like, I was so excited and so into it, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna understand this movie in a way that other people aren't, because I spent all this time digging through this thing, and then nothing. It was a waste.
I thought Cloverfield was a TV show. Like it had a big universe.
No. It was a movie.
Well, maybe they talked.
And then there's 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was a movie that came out recently that's sort of in the universe, I suppose. I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing.
Anyway, yeah. Overwatch did that with Sombra's release. Which is exactly what you're talking about. There were links to Lumerica's website, and then you had to hack in. You had to hack into the president's account and send an email and delete emails and all of that kind of stuff.
Like that's super clever.
That's cool. It's called an ARG, alternate reality game.
Yeah, yeah, like that viral marketing kind of thing. It's a super clever thing to do.
And yes, Doki Doki Literature Club is probably meant to build up hype for Project whatever. I can't pronounce it.
I loved it. Thank you, Presley, for sharing it with me and having me play it. I had a good time. So I really enjoyed it.
Make sure when there's more information released to please check out their next game.
We'll say something here.
It's important.
We'll keep you posted.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to El Radio.
Woo. Are you going to do the bridge thing?
No, we're going to do the bridge thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. No bridge thing. Yeah. Whoops.
Let's go to El Radio.
Yeah.
What do you got on El Radio?
All right. So El Radio is so unbelievably underrated. It makes me so angry.
Is it underrated compared to his first album, or is it just overrated in general?
Underrated. Oh. In general. And actually, one of the songs on this album, Dirty Night Clowns, is extremely popular, and it's been used in I know the Homestuck fandom. Please don't try to talk to me about Homestuck, though. I read half of it and got bored. So I don't know anything about Homestuck, because apparently nothing happens in the first half of Homestuck.
I could have said exactly the same thing about Doki Doki Literature Club.
Right. Like, nothing happens in the first half of Homestuck, and no one will let me skip. But whatever. Homestuck rant over. It's been used very popularly in the Homestuck and Undertale fandoms.
Dirty Night Clowns has.
Dirty Night Clowns.
Like AMVs and stuff, or just...
Yep.
All right. All
edgy
right.
AMVs!
That's right. Okay. Woo! All right. Cool.
So it's been used a bunch in both of those fandoms, but no one ever checks out the rest of his work, which makes me really mad because it's beautiful.
That wasn't the best song on the album,
I think.
Yeah.
It was not the best song in the album, but it's the one that is...
It's a good one.
Yes, it's good.
I like
it's,
the lyrics to it, and it's good, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it was the best one on the album.
It's the one that relates to Gamzee?
I don't know what that means.
That's a Homestuck character.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I think it's that one. He's the clown one, right? I know my friend really likes him.
Yeah. Yeah, this actually, there was a little bit of a tie-in, I thought, that made it interesting that we were doing this with Doki Doki, because it's poetry, right?
Yeah.
The lyrics, it's very much, to me, it was poetry that was set to music more than it was songs.
Right.
Like, it didn't feel totally like they were written to be songs as much as they were written as standalone poems, and then they were put to music. And so even a lot of the poetry in Doki Doki reminded me of some of the lyrics from this track.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of, I could see taking almost any of these songs and putting them in something like Doki Doki or reading them in a poetry class or a literature club, and they would fit right in.
Yeah.
So I put like more poetry than songs, even.
Makes me want to start a literature club somehow.
And it also, before we go into like song by song kind of stuff, it didn't introduce me to the genre, but it introduced me to the word for the label for the genre, and that was chamber pop.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome. It's a great name.
Yes.
So it's like a pop version of chamber music.
Yeah.
And so it's like a cross between chamber music and easy listening, which I thought was kind of funny. And it's kind of people rebelling against like the dirty sound of alternative music and like grunge and stuff like that, like the lo-fi recording kind of stuff. It's the people that are kind of revolting against that and revolting. So it's people that are are going the opposite direction and going with like nice, clean, orchestrated music. And then so you get like the orchestral part of it, which it does include strings and horns and things like that, but then they also take the easy listening part and they strip that stuff down to its essence, so it's relatively simple melodies but structured like an orchestral kind of arrangement. And I think it's really, really awesome.
It's
and I think
so
they also call
good.
It Orc Pop, which I think is a great name. Yeah, like orchestra.
Orc.
So it's Orc Pop. I think
it's
Orc Pop is an awesome. Yeah. Chamber Pop is a better name, but Orc Pop is I like Orc
Pop
a lot.
For orcs.
So I think it was I loved that, and that got me down a whole rabbit hole of listening
chamber
to
pop.
Other like searching for chamber pop
yeah,
and listening to a
so
bunch
cool.
of chamber pop bands. So that's definitely fits in my kind of genre. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. All right. And then it is one of my favorite albums, definitely. And it's just like, it's all by him. It's all
by
Chris.
Like, it definitely sounds like it's one person's pet project. Mm-hmm. I don't know for a fact, but I would not be surprised if he played all the instruments. Mm-hmm. And sort of did all the work. You can tell it's one person because it's a singular vision. And so it feels like one person certainly composed it. Whether he played everything or not, I don't know. But I would not be surprised to find that he actually just layered himself on top of everything and, mm-hmm. and did everything for it.
Yeah. Right. And it's just, like, it's all his. And it's all, like, oddly enough, the simplicity of it makes all of the lyrics and singing so much more heart-wrenching. Like, mm-mm. I've cried listening to this album multiple times.
Yeah, like one of the reviews I read of it was talking about like his androgynous voice.
Yeah.
And that it's very airy and...
it's a good voice.
Some people, and on a couple of songs in a couple of places, I agree, felt like it was a little affected. Like it didn't feel supernatural. It felt like he was playing a character singing the song instead of him sort of purely from himself singing the song. Uh-huh. Most of the time it felt like it was just him. But a couple of times it kind of felt like it was an affect that he was putting on that felt a little disingenuous in a couple of places to me.
Yeah.
And one of the reviews mentioned that, and I thought that was true. Mm-hmm. And that was one of their main criticisms of this album versus, what, Music for Tourists?
Yes, Music called? For Tourists.
Music for Tourists, they felt was a little more pure
him.
And that this was a little more like intentionally marketed and designed and composed in a way that Music for Tourists was just him making music that he wanted to make and loved. And I haven't listened to Music for Tourists, so I can't comment on that specifically, but I did feel a little affected in a couple of places.
I will mention that in Music for Tourists, it's very, very similar. Specifically in a song, First Place, it is a very big example of what I was talking about a second ago, where like the music is so simple, but he's almost like his voice sounds like it's almost crying at one point,
yeah.
and that just makes it so much better.
Yeah.
And it happens in this album too. Mm-hmm. And this is the first one I got into. I actually got into it entirely because of Spotify. I don't use Spotify anymore,
okay.
but I have to give the one thing I will give credit to Spotify for is that it did introduce me to this album, and because I was just listening to my mix, and Spotify likes to play song glitched out for me a lot and started playing songs that weren't on my playlist.
Huh?
And one of them was this song because I had Dirty Night Cons on my playlist because I obviously knew about that one. Mm-hmm. And then it started playing the other song and I thought it was bop. It was a
it's
jam.
Chamber pop.
It was a bop and I loved it, so I added it to it. So I started listening to it a lot more.
Sweet.
And
all right, do you want to talk about any of the individual songs?
Let's go in order, I guess. And
okay.
you have your notes on them, right?
Yeah, I've got
a list here. I'll pull them up on my phone then, too.
Okay.
I just don't... I'm trying to avoid picking up my phone because you can hear it. It's really
loud. Yeah, sure.
So you can start off while I pull up my notes.
Yeah, so it starts with the Leaving song.
Yeah.
And I actually don't have anything for the Leaving song.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I think I listened to the Leaving song in Dirty Night Clowns and then started taking notes at Raw and Awake, and I went back and plugged in some notes for Dirty Night Clowns. But I didn't do anything for the Leaving song.
Well, let me talk about the Leaving song, because it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you take the point on the Leaving song.
So the Leaving song, I cried.
I think also on the Leaving song, if you look at Genius, where the lyrics are, they don't have all the lyrics in there. It's really kind of weird.
Weird.
Yeah.
Is it one of those things where it's like, it says, then do the chorus, and then do the bridge? Like, that happened a couple times in Guns N' Roses.
No, it was just, they weren't all there.
Oh, weird. Okay, so the Leaving song is the first one in, I thought it was the last one for some reason. I think it's the last one on Spotify, but it might be the first one on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's the first one. And they're actually, the album is actually divided into seasons.
Yeah.
Like, three songs each, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the classic seasons kind of thing, just like when we did, I guess that was Imagine Dragons.
Yeah.
They're like, songs about the fall, waiting for the fall.
And summer.
The summer and stuff, yeah. So, we were singing about seasons. Is not an uncommon thing, but this album, and like when Guns N' Roses was divided in the G side and the R side, this has the seasons, and I think each of the three songs is a season: spring, summer, fall, winter. Yeah.
And so the Leaving song was the I have cried during this song several times, and it's just because usually I listen to this album a lot when I'm going to sleep, and I'm very over emotional when I'm about to fall asleep. So I have cried during this song several times. I think it's just like a really beautiful and, I almost said terrible, like, it's not a terrible song, but the lyrics are singing about, like, a kind of terrible thing. She's singing about, the character is singing about, someone, like, leaving her for good and, like, abandoning her. And I keep saying her.
Yeah, I was going to point out the exact same thing. Like, you're assuming that the perspective
character
is from a girl.
Okay, this is because I have planned out half of an AMV to this for one of my OCs.
Okay.
So I keep talking about it in her head.
I got you. Okay.
Don't worry. I'm not singing about, I'm not talking about the singer. I'm talking him. His the person singing.
Well, I thought you just related to it so strongly that
I do relate
to the
song.
You were talking about it as yourself.
I do relate to this song a lot. Yeah. But it sings about such a terrible event that happened to this person. And like, at the very end, the last lyric is, "And sing me a leaving song as you're leaving. Mm-hmm. Goodbye, goodbye." And like, his voice is like, it sounds like he's crying.
Right.
And this happens with Michael in the Bathroom, which is a Be More Chill song. And mm-hmm. both of these songs break mm-hmm. my heart so much. And it's because they're crying during the song. And that is usually something that artists tend to avoid. So the song has a smoother feel.
Yeah.
But when it does happen, it breaks your heart into a million pieces.
No, I liked it. I remember liking it. I just didn't write my notes down for it for some reason.
Yeah, leaving song. Good. Okay.
Okay. Dirty Night Clowns.
Yes, Dirty Night Clowns. I already talked about this one a little bit. Fandom song.
Do you think it's overrated?
I don't think it's overrated because it's a gorgeous song. Mm. I just think it's not the best song on the album, and the rest of the album should be liked more than it should.
Yeah, so I like the imagery in this one of like the I can't clean the leaves from here.
They're too far
under the branch brush, this year.
Brush this year.
Is it brush?
Yes.
So like that's an interesting.
Yeah.
Like things are too buried that I can't. Like that's clearly talking about his psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to clear stuff out, but some stuff is just too buried. And from where you are right now in your life, you can't reach back and clean some of those things out because mm-hmm. they're too buried. That was a really nice
I can't
imagery.
Say the music video for this has a really long intro, which mm-hmm. bothers me. A couple of my favorite songs
Oh, yeah.
Really
I remember I tried to watch this and I had to, I was like 75% through the file before music started playing. I just kept skipping forward to try and find it because I just wanted to hear the music.
And then the music video is like really weird because the song is like allegedly about child predators mm-hmm. but the music video is clown puppet wants to dance
mm-hmm. okay.
and it's really weird.
All right.
A lot of my favorite songs have really weird music videos, which I've mentioned before, but
okay. Raw and awake,
this one is so good too. Yep. I really love this one.
All right, what are your notes?
This one is I do think that this song pertains to its name, where the singing is very I don't know how else to describe it, but it's very raw.
Yeah,
like it's just pure voice, and it's not altered in any way to fit to, well, I mean, obviously it fits the song, so that's how music works, but it's not like altered specifically to go along with everything else happening in the song, and it's very just straight from his diaphragm, words just happen.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. He said, because it's like about him being awake and struggling, and he can't stop his mind to go to sleep, which I think a lot of people can relate to.
Oh, God, I really
but
so much.
And then his SO is kind of saying, it's going to be okay, like sort of validating his position. And he says, offer solutions instead of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of the opposite of like the feedback that you get most of the time.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it's you're not supposed to be offering ways for another person to fix their problem. You're supposed to be like recognizing their problem and acknowledging that they're in kind of a tough position.
Yeah.
And so like the general feedback is don't focus on solutions, focus on like validation and recognition of the issue.
Work.
And so the fact that he's calling out, like, I think it's great that you're telling me everything's going to be okay and that you're here with me, but offer me solutions and not your heart.
Right.
I think that's an interesting, because, that was
like,
a good line.
You know, and I relate to this song super duper heavily because my brain is very active, and it's part of the reason why I'm sure I've mentioned a few times in the vlog, I get in bed at 11 and then fall asleep at like 1 a.m.
Right.
And like, it's just because...
Oh, hey, we got an Amber Alert, it sounds like, here in L.A.
Yay, missing children.
Okay, go ahead.
But it's like, you know that what you're thinking, that your brain is buzzing and yelling at you, and you know what it's saying is irrational.
Right.
And you can, if someone tells you it's irrational and everything's going to be fine, even if the person's yourself, you're like, cool, but I still can't sleep until this stops.
Yeah.
Please give me a solution.
No, I like that. Okay, cool. Hands on the Radio.
Hands on the Radio. This is the one that gets stuck in my head most often.
Well, this one sounds like that song from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes.
This is one that sounds like Wig in a Box.
Wig in a Box,
which gets stuck in my head a lot.
Yay!
Because they have a very similar melody.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was my favorite song.
Yeah, this one's really good.
I really enjoyed this one. I didn't...
My favorite one was Firefly.
I want to read it a lot more and try and understand the lyrics a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
What he's trying to say, but I couldn't dive all the way into it. Like, I haven't quite cracked the nut on this one, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to spend more. This is one I want to spend more time with and learn
more about.
I'm
glad
sure.
you want to spend more time with this album.
But I liked this one. Yep.
And then there's No More Pirates.
No More Pirates.
Yep. Which is, I think it's really cool. I don't quite understand it perfectly. Mm-hmm. Just like, obviously pirates is a, not euphemism. Well, mm-hmm. not, it's not the right word.
Yeah, euphemism is pretty good.
Euphemism, mm-hmm. sure.
Metaphor.
Metaphor. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for something else, but I can't mm-hmm. figure out what.
I like that this one is the first time he brought in a good horns section. So I thought the horns was kind of cool. It reminded me of like Cake and their like horn section. I thought it was kind of cool. And then this is the one that I listened to and I showed you Twink.
Oh yeah,
which is
best
like this,
band name.
They've got like a little toy piano, and they play this really cool,
it's
like
so
industrial
cool.
kind of music on this little toy piano and other toy instruments now. But they started out just with a toy piano. And if you're gonna, if you're interested in looking them up, I would recommend searching for Tweak Piano Music. Like throw as many extra keywords in there as you can.
Actually, if you do search Twink into YouTube, the second video that comes up is by Mac Does It, and I love Mac, so you should watch that.
Yeah, don't. But I don't recommend doing that.
You
though.
Don't just search for Twink.
So, Twink, the toy piano band.
Yeah,
is
that
an
will
excellent,
give you a lot
excellent
of,
search for you.
If you just search for Twink,
if you want to listen to those guys,
it'll give you a lot of things you don't want.
Yeah, no, I like this one. This was a good time. Fireflies.
Fireflies. Woo! I love Fireflies. This is one of my favorites on the mm-hmm. album.
I wrote spoons. Is there something in there about spoons?
Maybe. Which spoons are you talking about?
Well, I mean, maybe it was about like spoons, about like Spoon Theory.
Yes.
There was something in there that reminded me of Spoon Theory, but it's been long enough that I don't remember now. I just said spoons?
The music video, again, for this one is a fun time. It's just someone running a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is, I like this music video, though. It's such a good song, and I really like the... Like, there's, like, two choruses in
his song. Yeah, I like this
song.
This was a good one. This is probably my second favorite song.
Mm-hmm. One of the songs, one of the choruses is You're Making Friends with the Fireflies. I can't say that comes as a surprise.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really clever. Mm. And I really like the metaphor. Like, just because this is so deep, a lot of the metaphors don't make sense to me, but I love the metaphors themselves.
You got to spend some time with the songs and kind of dig in, and suddenly you'll have epiphanies and things will kind of hit you and stuff.
An epiphany that affects your poems, maybe?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like I said, they all tie together. All right, Hometown Girls.
Hometown Girls. I really love this one. And this is one of the ones that I wouldn't think I would like, because mm-hmm. I usually hate a lot of songs that are like about that, like talk about girls and girls being all this like... Because that's kind of what the song is. It's like girls and they're shallow and they do this and this and this, and that's how girls generally are.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually really like the song, and I think a lot of the points in it
I thought
really
it was
cool.
more like blatantly about like people who put up with domestic abuse.
Oh, man.
Then this one was more straightforward than a lot of the other songs that I listened to, right? And there's a line, I wrote down one of the lines from it towards the end that said that girls need to learn a thing from their mama's burns.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, you need to learn not to allow certain things that maybe were allowed before.
Yeah.
You need to stand up for yourself. And, I thought this one was more directly about... No, I mean, I can read it and listen to it again, but I was thinking of it in terms of girls who allow themselves to remain in abusive situations.
Wow, that's actually a really interesting read of it, because I was sort of reading it as girls who are, like... running, because it says sometimes girls they run away,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking that is about like girls who like run away from home and start doing rebellious illegal activities mm-hmm. and stuff like
yeah,
that. So that's
we'll
an issue
look.
Too.
Yeah, we'll have to look at
but
that.
Yeah, right. Interesting. That's a all cool right. thing.
I also this one was the first one with harmonica that I noticed.
Yeah,
he definitely brings in a lot of instruments, which I think is cool. Over and over.
Over and over. This one has a sword in it. Whoa, a swear word. Also, I think I haven't said that in the vlog. Sword is my way of saying swear word. But over and over is really interesting, because it is about feeling like someone has put you in a cycle that goes over and over.
Yeah, I've got this interesting, bad things stay and good things pass away.
Yeah.
Which I've written, is the opposite of songs like Polaroid.
Yeah.
Where like when you look back on the past, it's better than you thought it was.
Yeah.
Like you see this idealized version of the past and think about it as being great. And this one is sort of the opposite of that. Bad things stay and good things pass away. You just see the bad things. Like if he looks at his Polaroids, it's probably a very depressing evening for him. Right. now he I'm remembers just everything him, like, that was going wrong around when they took
that's
that
interesting, and that's not how your psyche should work. Please.
And then they had kids singing at the end of this one.
Yeah,
like a little kid chorus kind of thing.
I thought that was really cool.
I can't remember.
I think it was one kid.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really cool.
I like having the kids singing. Yeah,
always a little creepy when you got the one kid singing in the in an album like this. And speaking of cats and kids.
Cats and Kids. Mm. This one's a good song. I've actually...
I just wrote, apparently she's not coming back. Because I think it says that line like 40 times in this one song. I'm like, okay, I get it. She's not coming back. Mm-hmm. All right.
And it's about death. And yay. And it's... a lot of lyrics in this song are repeated in the Pirates Reprise, which we're going to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, we're almost there. Yep.
But
this one also had like either a xylophone in it. Or it almost sounded like a music box, like a wind-up little music box.
Yeah, yeah.
It could have been a xylophone, but it really kind of sounded like a music box. And this one reminded me of the twink, the toy piano stuff, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
The instrument exploration I thought was really interesting.
The twink.
The twink. Reminded me of this twink that I knew.
Cough, cough, my OCs, cough, cough.
Right, go ahead.
And I have sent this one. This one is just... when I kill off a character and my friends are like, no, you can't just do that. I send them a link to this song because it's like, she is not coming back.
Right.
She is not coming.
All right. Do you want to pronounce the title of the next one?
No.
I assume that's French.
It. Yes.
And it's an instrumental.
French. It is an instrumental. I think this one is really cool. It's really calming.
Yeah.
It is.
The whole album is really good, like background music too, to like put on while you're working and doing something else. I think
you need
it's
Shannon
really
to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's just, we can, right.
Shannon can do this.
The last thing I need is Shannon in my life. More Shannon.
More Shannon.
That's a Lost reference for those of you who aren't playing along with the greater aspects of what's going on in the ACT UP Games family. I don't remember there being so much Boone and Shannon, quite frankly. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Boone and Shannon, and I don't remember that there was so... I must not have really started paying super attention to Lost until the second season. Because while I remember some of the things that are happening, like Boone and Shannon are like major characters, and I don't remember them being as major characters. And maybe that's a little bit spoilery in the fact that they may not be major characters.
How dare you!
But they could also be, and I just hated them so much that I blocked them from my memory.
I don't like
Boone
keep
Lost.
Making me. let's talk about Lost.
It's an old side thing. All right.
I can see Mom's doing that.
So, all right, the things she said.
Things
she said.
Oh,
I love this. Like, this is kind of a funeral kind of song, right?
Yeah.
And then he had this line, when people come, when people go. And so that plays both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it can be people come and people go, like at a funeral kind of thing, people are coming and going. Or it could be when people come because someone went.
Yeah.
Like they're coming because someone died. So when people come, when people go, blah, blah, blah. Like, and
it really blows your mind.
I actually had this conversation with a guy at work yesterday, the day before, that one of my grandmothers passed away, like it was a really hard time for me.
Yeah.
And we had, like, there was a cross country drive and we were trying to get there and be there. We knew she'd gone in the hospital and we got there like minutes too late for me to see her before she passed. And so she was gone when we got there, but just like super, super recently and stuff. And it was super, and she was still in the hospital, but it was super hard for me. And then there was the funeral after that. And like, I got a Southern family. So there's lots of viewings and responsibilities. And there's a service in the church and then there's a graveside service. And then the family comes back late. And there's a whole to do. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of broke me a little bit. And so I just said, like, at that point, I'm like, I'm never going to another funeral. Like, I'm just letting you all know now. Like, I am done with the concept of funerals. Like, I think it's ridiculous. I think it has nothing to do with the person in the box. Like, it's about the people that are left behind and trying to find some way to console themselves. And that's totally fine. And you, if this is something you need to find peace and console yourself, you do it. I don't.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make me better. It puts me in a much worse place. And so I'm done. I'm not going to any more funerals. And so listening to this song was kind of making, when people come, when people go, I was like, yeah, that's not me anymore. Like, I'm no longer in that class of people.
That goes to funerals.
So that brought up a lot of thoughts about kind of that position of mine and stuff. Yeah.
And I really like this song. And I have, this is one that I listen to a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the cat pole. I keep thinking it's cat hole for some reason. The cat pole, which is a cat tails.
Yeah.
Whispers things she said.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And there's a line, I can't remember the specific line now, that is, like, it's kind of about revisiting someone who, it sounds like they drowned in the ocean. Because it's like, oh, it's, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, Mom, ocean, are you sorry too?
Right.
And it sounds kind of like, and like with all of the metaphor of the catpole whispering thing she said.
Yeah, and there's also like that, if you're in that environment, like if you're around, like in Tennessee, you get a lot of this, like the cattails, and that would be on like the edge of the water.
Yeah.
And so if you've got a nice, strong breeze blowing through, you get, it's like, it's called whispering. And so it sounds like the wind flowing through those cattails is kind of making these sounds, and it sounds like whispering. And so it's almost like you can understand what is being said to you. Like the cattails were whispering to you as the wind flows through. And if you have a strong, like, pattern recognition
with
desire, then you may hear, you know, like what's the audio recording thing that the BuzzFeed guys do?
Which one? The ghost box or the...
Yeah, like the ghost box or the radio. What do you call the
thing
where you like you record it and then you come back and listen to it later?
Oh,
and
that
you
is...
hear the EMV.
EMP.
So it's kind of like that. Like if you're really looking for something and you're listening to white noise, sometimes you'll hear those patterns because you're looking for it. And so if you're in a certain place mentally and you're hearing the breeze blowing through the cattails, you can hear people whispering things to you and stuff.
Yeah.
Another good Lost reference too.
Like, yeah, I know. I was like, haha, Lost.
All right, cool.
And yeah, I think that's really cool because it does sound to me like the person is going to the site where they're... It sounds like their mom died.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. I didn't get that. But that's fair. I'll listen to it again.
It's like, and it's at like next to the water, and they're grieving her there.
Cool.
Pirates Reprise.
Yep.
You said this one is Cats and Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of the Cats and Kids lyrics.
But they're altered.
They are. No, they're altered. I'm not saying it's like replaying Cats and Kids.
I know.
I'm just saying it's more of a Cats and Kids reprise than a Pirates reprise.
Right.
Which is, they've got to be saying something.
Yeah.
Like calling it that.
Maybe
but
we'll
again, I don't know what. We don't know what the pirate metaphor is. And so
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll keep diving deeper. But
I like it. And it's just like, it's one of those songs which I really love, which happens a lot in musical theater.
Yep.
Where it's different lines from all of the different songs on the album.
Yeah, yeah.
That are all coming back at once.
Yeah, and no, the reprise kind of thing.
I like it, especially when they're all on top of each other.
Sweet.
That happens at the end of Wait For It in Hamilton, and it's my favorite part of Hamilton.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
Black Hawk Waltz.
Okay, I don't have anything for that either.
Another instrumental, I think.
Oh, it's an instrumental. Okay, that's why.
Yeah. This one is... this one's really good. It really... And, like, another... Both of the instrumentals on this album are very calming.
Mm-hmm.
Black Hawk Waltz is really interesting because it is a waltz. And it sounds like something I've heard before, and I can't.
What's the orchestral aspect? Like, this stuff is like part of the idea behind a lot of this is that the orchestral components of it specifically are, I don't know. It's like this theory that the chord structures and the melodies and the way that they wrote some of this classical music like taps into this collective subconscious almost. And like over like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of development, it's this language that we all speak and we all understand. And so when you hear it, it sounds familiar immediately because we're so hardwired to recognize these tones and these chord changes and these, you know, intervals in music. And so he's basing a lot of the structure of the songs that he's doing around this intentional and historic language of music.
Yeah.
And so the idea when you hear it is that it sounds super familiar. And part of it is because like all music that we listen to today has grown out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hear common themes and again, common intervals and common structures and melodies. And so you've heard it before and there's only 12 notes. And so you only hear them in so many different combinations.
Yeah.
And so you have heard it before, but part of it is also potentially this idea of this innate recognition of certain melodies and structures that classical music taps into. So that's part of what chamber pop is all about, is leveraging some of those like built-in abilities to grok music and to connect to music really quickly and stuff. So yeah, I totally agree.
I agree. I thought you were going to, when you started talking about like the... When you started talking, I thought you were going to bust into some, like, hive mind conspiracy
no,
theory.
No. Like, no,
yes.
No, like the Akashic Records kind of thing. It's not that. It's just that there's supposed to be this, in our DNA, is hard-coded a response to certain types of music is, yeah. is a theory, is one of the things out there.
And I think that's really, really cool. And yeah. biology is fascinating.
Okay. So we're way over an hour at this
point.
Yeah,
and I have like class in like an hour, in like 30 minutes.
Oh, you got to get to work. Ready. We got a lot of stuff to do. But yeah, so these were both a lot of fun. So again, thank you very Yay. Much for sharing these.
You're welcome. I'm glad you liked them.
I loved them both. I will do more of both of them. Like that's a rare thing. More like I'm not sort of turning them off. I'm gonna do more of the sides and paths in Doki Doki to kind of see where it goes. Yes. And trying to hack around and see what I can get the system to do. And I'm definitely going to listen to this album more. So thank you very much for sharing.
Yay!
Your homework for next week mm-hmm. is going to be both of the Blade Runners.
Oh, so you decided to do
both. Yeah, we're going to do both. We're going to watch the classic Blade Runner, and then we're going to watch the new one and sort of compare them, and we'll talk about both of them next week.
Is this the first week without an album?
It is the first week without an album.
Whoa!
Yeah, two movies.
Two movies.
Cool. So we're going to do that. And again, go ahead and shout out how people get in touch with us real quick.
All right. So if you want to get in touch with us and recommend things for us to watch, as well as tell us your thoughts on the things that we've done in the podcast before, make sure to leave a comment on the YouTube video with the audio on it, or leave a tweet or hit us up over Twitter at @validatemecast, or be the first person to send us an email at validatemepodcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you. So yeah, check out Blade Runner and come back and listen to us talk about it next week.
Yeah.
And until then,
bear with us.